Good morning, everybody. Today is the, why can't I see it? The 13th of September, 2013. And we're working with techniques of integration webinar commentaries. And we have completed number 13, or on to number 14, Esoteric Psychology 2. Page 371, we have worked with the first five of the integration formulas, and the words of power, at least the words which are memorable in relation to these formulas, are inclusion for the first ray, centralization second, stillness ray three, steadfastness ray four, detachment, ray 5. We're moving on now to the sixth ray formula of integration. These words relate, as DK says, to some of the preliminary steps in the formula. They are the means of fulfillment. And by through the use of these words in the right way, or for the attitudes that they represent, the use of these words in the right way and the attitudes they represent, there is a steadfast moving of the aspirant from the periphery towards the center, and a facilitation of the merging of the energy of the soul with the approaching aspirant. Now we move to a ray quite different from the one we just considered. We move to the sixth ray. And let's see, I think I will read it from here. This would be the best place. Here we go, ray six. I see a vision. It satisfies desire. It feeds and stimulates its growth. I lay my life upon the altar of desire, the seen, the sensed, that which appeals to me, the satisfaction of my need, a need for that which is material, for that which feeds emotion, that satisfies the mind, that answers my demand for truth, for service, and my vision of the goal. It is the vision which I see, the dream I dream, the truth I hold, the active form which meets my need, that which I grasp and understand, my truth, my peace, my satisfied desire, my dream, my vision of reality, my limited ideal, my finite thought of God. For these I struggle, fight, and die. Love of the truth must always be. Desire and aspiration reaching out for that which is material, or soaring upward towards the vision of reality, must ever find their satisfaction. For this men work, driving themselves and irking others. They love the truth as they interpret it. They love the vision and the dream, forgetting that the truth is limited by mind, narrow and set, one-pointed, not inclusive, forgetting that the vision touches but the outer fringe of mystery and veils and hides reality. The word goes forth from soul to form. Run not so straight. The path that you are on leads to the outer circle of the life of God. The line goes forward to the outer rim. Stand at the center. Look on every side. Die not for outer forms. Forget not God, who dwells behind the vision. Love more your fellow men. Well, okay, we begin. This is the ray, along with the second, particularly associated with the vision and with a one-pointed following of the vision. So the vision motivates the aspirant, the disciple, and striving, fiery striving towards the vision is the means of accomplishment. But of course, in this first paragraph, we have the condition of things as they stand. We have the non-integrated state. So there's a very quick reaction of the sixth-ray type. When the vision is seen, the urge to follow immediately is activated. The astral response is very quick. The sixth-ray is connected not so much with the mental body, but with the astral body and its reactions. Now, this vision can be high or low. At this point, it doesn't make much difference when we're describing the pre-integrational condition. This vision, high or low. It satisfies desire, which seems to be the most important thing. Whether, we can say, whether or not it is true. It satisfies desire and therefore is convincing, because essentially we have the emotional type of human being on the sixth ray. Every ray emphasizes certain vehicles, and let us say within the personality, the seventh ray will emphasize work on the outer or physical etheric plane, at first the physical. The sixth ray will emphasize astral response, and the fifth ray, the mental approach to life. And the other rays also can be found in their ways of usual expression in the lower vehicles, but also suggesting the higher. So I love to be, when I say I here, I'm speaking of the aspirant of whom this, to whom this relates. So it satisfies desire. The vision feeds and stimulates the growth of desire. And when I am in the grips of intensified desire, I feel alive and directed, vital, stimulated. This activity takes the place of the kind of self-questioning to which I might expose myself if I were not attracted by desire, driven by desire. It fills my consciousness, and I like that. So the follower, as it is called in the sixth ray law of repulse, the frenzied follower, is filled with the desire for whatever this vision reveals. And of course, the desire body feeds and stimulates the vision. We oftentimes pursue that especially that we desire. So here comes the extremism of the sixth ray type. I lay my life, you know, I give everything. The sacrificial urge, which at first may be unwise, but this is the sacrificial urge. And Master Moria tells us in an interesting way in today's contemporary context that the fastest way of spiritual development is martyrdom, he says. This suggests sometimes the unwise relinquishing of life for outer forms and for relative superficialities, and not necessarily for the essential divine principles, but nevertheless the seed of progress is there. So I lay my life upon the altar of desire. When we stand before an altar, it is a holy thing, and we consider it worth a sacrifice. So one sacrifices one's life for one's desires, whether good or bad, high or low, wise or foolish. The fact that one is in the grip of these desires is enough to compel that kind of sacrifice. So upon this altar is not deity or that which is holy necessarily, but whatever is of most attraction to the individual. So we can almost say that one's desires or picture are outpicturing of one's desires become one's deity. Okay. I lay my life upon the altar of desire. But now we begin to see the relative status of these desires. They are of all ranges depending upon the quality of the individual. The desires here relate to simply what the senses reveal. It might be something that is obvious and seen, something simply that we want, that which we sense. This all points to a certain outwardness at first, points to an outwardness of desire, lower desires. The seen, the sensed, that which appeals to me, that to which I am simply attracted. So my desires rule, my attractions. We can't judge the good on the basis of what we like or dislike. It may seem good or bad to us, but in the larger sense, it may not be what we think it to be. So what is good for us is not necessarily the good. And in the last analysis, the satisfaction of my need, or at least what I sense as a need, it may not be a real need, it may simply be a want, not be a real need, but simply a want, something towards which my desire body extends itself magnetically, something that is in resonance with the outgoing urges of my desire body. Desire, in a way, leads outward towards the periphery. And here is the whole range of possible desires. It may simply be that which is material. I may desire a new house, a new car, a new neighborhood, a new job, you know, something that is satisfying to my sense of being a satisfied person, because all of this is very personal at first. Is very personal. Not speaking of a sacrificial desire for the true spiritual principles. Not yet, but eventually. A need, or so I think it is when I feel these promptings, that I can't live without it, you know. of a need, it can be said, one can't live without it. Not necessarily true. Okay. A need for that which is material. For that which feeds emotion, so I can feel more intensely alive. So I can feel more intensely alive. And, you know, at a higher stage, that satisfies the mind. I want to to know all about that. I need to know all about that. I want or need to know. And therefore can feel more reinforced in my personhood. This is the whole thing. This is all about being a satisfied person. And it has nothing to do, at first, with the relinquishment of one's personal tendencies to a truly greater good. I sacrifice myself for that which that answers my demand for truth. It may not be the real truth at all, but at least according to my present level of understanding, it can be the truth as I see it, or even the truth as I desire it to be. The truth as I see it, or as I desire it to be. And then it starts to rise a little bit. That answers my, I lay my life upon the altar of desire, a need for material things, for emotional satisfactions, for mental satisfactions, for truth as I conceive it to be, it may be very far from the truth, for service, and in general, for my vision of the goal. It satisfies the mind. And my vision satisfies my desire for truth, for service, and my vision of the goal. So with the sixth ray type, as with the first ray, but in a much less emotional way, the need to reach the goal is all important. And so often, you know, the way to the goal is not considered important. Now, for some philosophies, the way is the life. But for this type, for the sixth ray type, the way or path is simply the way or path to the goal of whatever nature. Simply a means to an end. But, you know, as it is an endless pursuit, the end, the means turns out to be ignored at all times. In other words, the way of life, the normal processes of life are ignored, and only the goal is held in mind. So this can lead to a certain type of obliviousness with respect to present surroundings, a certain obliviousness in relation to certain to one's surroundings, to circumstance, and one's environment. Think about this abstraction. This is the ray of abstract idealism. The third ray is the ray of abstract intelligence or mind. And for both of these types, there can be a certain ignoring of the immediate foreground in the attempt to reach the goal. The ignoring of the immediate foreground in the attempt to reach the goal. So, not so suited for normal living, living which is engaged with the what's called immediately present. Well, that's the Virgo part of it. The Virgo is the sign which indicates service. So the immediately present is also a six-ray sign, but it has a way of concentrating upon that which is before the eyes and that which has to be dealt with in a practical sense in order to fulfill one's obligations of living. But so often the six-ray type rides right over that. If you've ever seen the look in the eyes of a six-ray preacher, the eyes are on heaven and not so much on what's going on here. And what's going on here is considered simply a means to an end. The end is heaven, and And changing what's happening here is the means so you can reach the goal. It's not enjoyment of the journey. Not the enjoyment of the journey. Because the journey is endless. And the goal is ever receding. And the sixth ray type does not want to hear this. Heaven is the end, right? Nirvana is the end. After that, no more work, no more effort, no more struggle, no more search, pursuit. You're there forever. So there is a dismissal from the mind of the ongoing process of life. Master Moria offers us nothing but endless labor. That would not be so appealing, I think, to many of the six-ray types. So, more about this vision. It is this desire nature. It is the vision which I see, I in my limited capacity to see. In my limited capacity to see. It is the dream I dream. My dream life is very different from others. It may have nothing to do with reality. The truth I hold may be very limited. The active form which meets my need, I may want certain conditions and certain energies and forces to be surrounded by them. It meets my present need. This is all about what is happening now in the desire body and fulfilling those longings of the moment. The active form which meets my need, that which I, in my limitation, grasp and understand, I don't care whether it's the full truth, I imagine that it is, and that everybody sees the truth as I do. The whole idea of psychological projection is very strong with this type. In other words, what is happening for me must necessarily be happening for all others. And I'm remembering, you know, DK was talking to one of his disciples who was a combination principally of the third and sixth rays, and thus it was also for two of them. They both had third ray souls, they both had sixth ray personalities, they both had fifth ray minds, they both had third ray physicals. The only difference was that one had a first ray astral body and the other a sixth ray astral body. I just realized that, what a close relationship there was between BSD and LTSK. BSD was a more advanced disciple. LTSK had a lot of trouble with glamour, but it's so interesting that these people, their lives became an example for all of us, and we learned how to relate to what they were passing through and find the commonalities between ourselves and them, or the differences. And so even though they went through their struggles, their struggles, which may not have led to success in their own case, enhanced the opportunity for success of the reader and the student of the Discipleship in the New Age books. My truth. Notice there's so much about ahamkara here. This is a selfish point of view. And the limited identity looms very large. It's a very dualistic approach. And the emphasis is always here on the little self. My truth, not the truth. My peace. Peace to me, not necessarily peace in the larger sense. My satisfied desire, whether or not the desires of others are satisfied, as long as mine is satisfied, I'm quite happy. My dream, my vision of reality very far from reality as a whole. The all-seeing eye is not seeing as my vision sees. My limited ideal, maybe something I'm striving for, and it would seem to be the peak of fulfillment for me, but it is very far from what greater souls may idealize and which may have more importance for the elevation of the scheme in which I'm in. So this may not be ideal from the perspective of many. This is a big one, finite thought of God. When you see how people do define God, you see it is such a, so dependent on their own limitations of mind, so dependent on their own limitations of mind, and dependent as well upon their desire for comfort and satisfaction. Well, you know, there is a conception, it's a kind of a humorous conception at this point, because maybe not so many religious people believe in it, but, you know, a conception of heaven consisting of white robes and harps and angelic wings. This is what it's going to be like forever. Well, if you were trapped doing any one thing formally forever, it would be hell indeed. So I'm sure that many of us have more sophisticated conceptions of what the heaven worlds are like. But it's interesting about the search for permanence in the sixth ray type. It must be the final ideal, the final revelation, to relieve one from further work. Search for the final revelation, the final ideal, the final state, permanence, to relieve one from anxiety. This is what so many sixth-ray types search for. You know, I'm using this word types. I'm not saying this is mostly about sixth-ray souls, but sixth-ray personalities can be involved in this, and also, you know, sixth-ray monads, there are such. He talked about them as, you know, constituting, among others, the mystics of the last 1,000 years in the West. So I just simply say, for the sake of generalization, the sixth-ray type. Anyway, we see the selfishness of the vision. So I struggle, fight, and die for selfish desires and a selfish vision. For selfish desires and a selfish vision. And most of all, I do not realize the limitations of that to which I adhere. In fact, for my comfort and reduction of anxiety, I force it upon others. So there is no agonizing contrast, hinting that I might be wrong, and thus igniting the insecurity I always feel, because I am truly blind to the higher truth and values. Well, we know the psychology, and we see it playing out in the world. The third and the sixth ray, however, don't make a very good psychologist together. At least that's what D.K. tells us. He talked about the third ray, sixth ray man, who was such a very poor psychologist. He was simply interested in certain types of thought and wildly, definitely at least, devoted and only to those forms of thought. And he really wasn't interested in others. In order to be a reasonable psychologist, you have to have at least a receptivity towards others. And if you're always rather maniacally trying to impose your point of view upon others to get permanency and consistency, then you cannot be properly receptive and cannot really understand others. It's based upon that. Psychology is based upon understanding. So we have seen what it's like for many, many thousands of years, maybe even millions of years, as the sixth ray has grown and as the sixth ray soul has grown in influence upon the personality which is not yet integrated, and even as it starts to be integrated in a selfish sense, these particular methods, which are not calculated to reach real spirituality or real truth, or at least an elevated form of truth, these are not operative. So now the wiser voice speaks. Where does it come from? It comes from the soul perspective, from which will issue forth a word. There must always be. Love of the truth must always be. Okay. And this is shared by the second ray type, the, third ray type, eventually, and the fifth ray type. I can't say that it's not shared by all, although for the fourth ray type, beauty and truth may be more equivalent, and the seventh ray type may be interested in practicality, but all those who seek out the soul and its life are interested in the truth, but there's a particular, the love of pure and abstract truth, pure truth, as D.K. calls it, love of pure and unchanging truth is often found with the second ray type and the sixth ray type. So these are things that must always be, but there are distortions operating due to the limitations of the personality involved. Desire and aspiration, reaching out for that which is material, as is so often the case in the beginning. We cannot imagine that those under the influence of the sixth ray are always reaching for the stars. It's, for them it may be an elevation, but it may look to us like a very low desire or fixation. It depends on the point of view. Reaching out for that which is material, or there's one of those great sixth ray words, soaring, like the angels soar, like the birds soar. Those who rise high in order to reach some great height or ideal. Soaring. A very sixth ray word. Soaring upward towards the vision of reality must ever find their satisfaction. There will always be the desire for something higher. That is how we evolve. This is how we ascend. We evolve through gradual ascent. And sometimes, like Icarus, we fly too close to the sun in search of our ideal, and we cannot stand the energy that we contact, and the basis of our flight is destroyed. We have to start all over again, maybe sadder but wiser. So there will always, for humanity and all forms of life, be a reaching out for the next integration, the next whole, the next higher and more satisfying and unitive state. When a person is united with their desire, they feel for a brief moment that sense of unity, the duality, temporarily. Maybe very briefly, but temporarily is overcome with satisfaction of desire. The agonizing sense of duality is briefly overcome, and we all seek, really, if we would get to the bottom of our nature, to reduce the two to one, to find that state of wholeness and livingness and spiritual vibratory elevation which reduces the dissonance of the two. Well, the dissonance of the two may be harmonized at some point, but even that harmonization has to be overcome in the homogeneity finally. So all of us are bound in this way. It just depends on whether we work wisely or with fanatical limitations. For this, that is, for the satisfaction of the vision of reality, and for whatever our desire demands, we work. For this men work, driving themselves and irking others. Here is the Martian quality of the sixth ray. So, driving forward from a state of dissonance and lesser satisfaction to an imagined or envisioned state of harmony and greater satisfaction, this is why we move forward, oftentimes ignoring the beauty and potential harmony of the moment. We drive ourselves and we drive others, and through the glamour of interference, stepping into something we do not know in the lives of others, we irk them, we irk others through the glamour of interference. We are not psychologists. We don't know what's really going on in the life of other people, but we have our ideal, which of course must be right for everybody, and we project it upon them, and we cause friction in their lives, disturbance in their lives, in the attempt to satisfy our own desires. So we disturb other lives in the attempt to reach satisfaction in our own. And without sufficient understanding, we impose our own dreams and ideals and visions upon others when they may not be suitable at all. But then we're not psychologists, so we don't attempt to understand what is suitable to others and what may not be suitable to them. We don't really care about others. Later, we're told, love more your fellow men. Well, okay, pay attention more to your fellow men. How can you love if you don't know, even who they are, because you're so busy imposing your own thoughts and methods and dreams and ideals upon them? But, there are limitations here, and the greater voice speaks of this. Yes, these are universal human inclinations, but as they are normally pursued in a state of ignorance, they have problems. They are not suitable means, and these human beings who act this way love the truth as they interpret it. It's just one little point of view, one little limited point of view. They love the vision and the dream. It excites them, so they feel alive. They feel they no longer feel overwhelmed by life and its processes, because they have the promise of everlasting happiness looming ahead. And they are convinced they will achieve it, and they will be, what, saved? Saved from the dissonance of life, saved from, as Master D.K. would say, the dire pain of life itself. This is the attempt to escape from the dire pain. The dire pain of life itself. But in this love of the vision and the dream, they forget that the truth is limited by mind. Sometimes we think our mental formulations are the truth, but that's just the outer crust, the outer shell. No mental formulation can be the truth itself. Of course, sometimes people point to their scriptures and this angel dictated it, or that disciple or apostle wrote it down, and really it's God's word, and you know, God was speaking in the particular language of the individual. So forgetting the problems of translation, God used this particular grammar and syntax and all the rest, and this is precisely what God had in mind, without any conception here that human language is a tremendous limitation upon not only God's thought, but any kind of elevated thought. So the mind in the condition that we usually find it with these types of individuals is narrow, not encompassing. It's set, it's fixated. You know, the idée fixe is involves a lot of sixth ray and fifth too, but this is a fixated mind, not flexible, and not able to consider many things. That's why sometimes there's such a war between the third ray and sixth ray types, as the third ray considers many things, even too many things, and the sixth ray type is only interested in one or a few, which reinforce the sense of impending satisfaction. So many people are satisfied in the moment because they are filled with the sense of impending satisfaction. I think I put that down. The sixth ray type lives more happily in the moment when filled with the sense of impending satisfaction. Narrow and set, one pointed, not many pointed, so obviously limited again, and not inclusive. This is the key. Certainly with all the lower three rays of attribute, but maybe the fifth and the sixth particularly have the greatest problem with sectarianism, with non-inclusivity, although D.K. does point to the possibility of the love of the form of the seventh ray producing sectarianism, my order and not your order, how we do things in this particular fellowship, different from how you do things. So it's a fixation upon the form, love of the form, because it produces security in the consciousness. And people are so fearful and so overwhelmed by life that they demand this security. One-pointed, not inclusive. So that takes care of the type of mind that interprets the truth. It can't be the truth when interpreted by this type of mind. And also forgetting that the vision, as attractive as it may seem, touches but the outer fringe of mystery and veils and hides reality. He sees naught but the vision of that which is before his eyes. We may remember the law of repulse. It's so vibrant for the sixth ray type. He just follows the immediate vision and at first does not have that long-range vision which later he will achieve. Well, okay, the mystery requires far more than an impulsive, superficial approach. An impulsive, superficial approach will not work to unveil the subtlety of the mystery. And we remember in the fifth ray formula that he penetrated into the mysteries of God, but not the mystery. A less formal, a more form-piercing or form-transcending, form-pervading attitude is needed to find that which lies behind the form. In this case, it is God. The true God, well, in both cases, forget not God who dwells behind the form. And in the fifth ray formula, the voice of the soul, the representative of God, was saying, know me. Right now you simply know the effects which have arisen through my emanation of myself, but know me. Trace the form back to its source. And there are many There are many today on the fifth ray who are doing that. They're in search in particle physics for something they now call the God particle. I don't know the details of it, but even putting the two things together shows the tracing of the form back to some sort of divine source. And this, of course, will eventually be fulfilled for the fifth ray as well. Well, okay, the voice of wisdom has spoken, and the limitations are revealed. Now, what to do about it? Let's see. The word goes out, because the sixth ray type in the state of consciousness described is out there on the periphery. The word goes out from soul to form, and it's a corrective. It's a corrective idea. We were told, detach yourself from form, okay, but now that's for the fifth ray. It's so interesting what the word says. The word offers a major corrective in each case. In this case, run not so straight, ignoring all that may be revelatory in your environment and all around you. Your eye is so much on the vision that you ignore the revelation of truth which stands around you. We're told in the repulse formula that the light is everywhere, in the heart, in me, in that which is, in all that stands around. So the attitude of seeing only the goal ignores the beauty and the truth of the immediate presentation of reality, which will forever cyclically be with us. If one finds only satisfaction in the attainment of the goal, and as we read in the Law of Repulse, we don't find satisfaction there, then there will be no satisfaction ever during the normal processes of life, and everything will be discounted and ignored, and you will kick the earth like a ball upon the playing field. Kick it away. It's not good enough compared to the ideal. And it's a kind of an ingratitude, you know. It is a type of ingratitude to look at all the life demonstration as less than one's own limited ideal. So you're running towards your goal, all right, and you're going straight there in an undeviating manner, so if anybody's in your way, watch out. You do not consider, you know, you do not learn from your encounters. You ignore them as less than the goal. Or you try to turn people around to face in the same direction you are, forgetting their own nature and imposing your nature upon theirs. Run not so straight. The path that you are habitually on leads to the outer circle of the life of God, and who would suspect it? Because these people feel they are running towards God or the ideal itself. They don't think they're running away from reality or the mystery. They think they're running right into the heart of the mystery. But the path, let's say, the path leads not to the heart of the mystery, where real satisfaction can be found. That which satisfies the inner man. The path that you are on leads to the outer circle of the life of God. The line goes forward to the outer rim, and when you tell the sixth ray person this, they will disbelieve. So, Instead, the antidote. Stand at the center, which is everywhere, really, which is everywhere. Not just some selective center, but you are surrounded by, on the wide playing field of life, you're surrounded by your fellow men, you're surrounded by reality at every turn, or at least if you interpret it properly, it is an evidence of reality. Stand at the center and stand at your own center, you might say. Stand at your own center, which is the soul center. So look within and find the center. And look everywhere, because divinity is everywhere. There's no place where divinity is not. Look on every side. And do not sacrifice your lives unnecessarily for the less real, for the outer, for the effect. So do not sacrifice your life for effects and for unrealities or for merely symbols of reality. You know, and many people have died for symbols. Of course, in a way, it is on its way to the reality that the symbol represents. If you think about a flag bearer in a battle, and the flag has to be held high no matter what, because it's of such psychological and motivating importance. And then a flag bearer is slain, shot. The flag falls, and someone else picks up the flag, and that one is slain or shot. And another comes along. The symbol of holding the flag aloft, I think, is a very good example of dying for an outer form, although in a battle it's of very great importance to keep the troop motivated. The six-ray anthem, national anthem of the United States, speaks about the flag that's still there after the night's battle, and it's a great symbol. Almost, we live in a world of symbols. We take them, these symbols, for realities. So it's kind of hard not to sacrifice at first for the symbol, because we don't sense the reality to which the symbol points. But once we begin to do that, we have to sacrifice ourselves not for outer expressions of the inner reality, but for the inner reality itself. We have so many people, you know, who are dying for the evidences of God and not for God itself. So there is this type of superficial vision, really, at first, type of superficial vision. And we are not to forget, or we are to somehow understand, that there's something still more real behind our vision. In other words, reduction of the value of the vision is necessary. And a more subtle type of sight, which can discern that the reality or the revelation of that towards which the vision points. So the vision is not the reality. Is not the reality. And this, here's where I think Zachary Lanzon is correct. The dissociation from one's vision, I think, is very important. Instead, one must search, a deeper search, as in the second ray, for the reality behind the vision. And then oftentimes the final sentence gives a very great hint as to the technique. Love more your fellow men, develop a heart relationship with them and don't see them simply as means to the end of achieving your ideal. So we'll put that down. Your fellow human beings are more beings, are more than the means by which you can achieve your goal. That would be just a superficial look at them. But in fact, you have to take in your fellow men for their own qualities and not just as means to an end. In other words, we tend to interpret everything when we're of this type in the light of the achievement of our vision. And things in their own right are not understood, because only our vision is desired. So things in their own right are not understood, because we are interested, in the discussion, interested only in our own vision and its achievement. So it's not like we really have a great climax here, as we do in some of the other. The admonitions continue, let's just say, all the way to the end. The admonitions from the soul and the word continue to the very end of the stanza. And we don't have such a positive statement of what can be achieved. You know, we're not talking about going to the one great, to the one great point where the one, how does it go, the one great center where the one point stands, that kind of thing. Let's see, let's look over here and see what are some of the climaxes that we have. Thou art the one, thou art the form. This is very climactic. Thou art the mind. Know this. It points to a great realization. And number four as well. Thus shall the beauty of the Lord shine forth. The hour is now. Okay. We have a climax going on there. And behind the forms the weaver stands, and silently he weaves. This is showing a higher state in action. And for the second ray type, I at the point love all, drawing them to the center and moving forward with the traveling points towards that great center where the one point stands. Okay, so we have a kind of climax going on there. And there is also in the first ray stanza quite a note of glory sounding. I move to power, I am the one. We are a unity in power, and all is for the power and glory of the one. No, when we come down to the sixth ray stanza, there is admonition to the very end, and the sort of final unitive state, or the state of real spiritual satisfaction, is not actually given. Well, I recall, you know, when DK is talking about the sign Taurus, he seems to find so many difficult things about it that he spends time warning about the Taurian tendencies. He's also warning here about the six ray tendencies. Just in review, I see a vision, high or low, it's my vision. It's what I have. It satisfies my desire, and at my emotionally polarized state of consciousness, that's what I want above all. It feeds and stimulates the growth of my desire, making me feel more alive, more happy, filled with a sense of impending satisfaction, and thus able to avoid or escape from some of the dissonances of life. And so in my non-restrained way, I lay my life, sacrifice my life upon the altar of desire. I am worshiping my desires, in fact, worshiping my desires. And those desires can be for any number of things. What my senses immediately reveal, that which I see and I sense, some particular appetite, some particular fixation within my environment, which I find temporarily satisfying. Whatever appeals to me, the me is important. And the satisfaction of what I consider to be my needs, even though they may be only wants. I don't know myself well enough to know what my real needs are. I only know what I want. And this want or need can be for that which is material, which intensifies my emotions so I feel filled with life and thus impervious to all the potentials for overwhelm in my environment. It's my next want I need to fulfill. I think I need to fulfill my next desire. Now I shift into the realm of mind and I want something more to make me feel like I'm more, to make me feel like I'm more impervious to the pains of life. I grow in my own sight, and thus the psyche feels more secure. I have a demand for various kinds of things. I want the truth so I can be forever stable in my consciousness and not have to search for truth anymore. That state of permanent happiness, that's what heaven is, permanent happiness. I want that. When I catch the ideal of service, then I want to serve, oftentimes for motives which are not truly serviceable motives, but for what they may bring to me, and for my vision of the goal. It satisfies my vision of the goal, which is the entire meaning of my life, and all of the things are interpreted in terms of that vision of the goal. So what's important to me is the vision which I see, the dream I dream, the truth I hold, the active form which meets my need. This shows all the different ways that the sixth ray can be directed. And towards that which I grasp and understand. I cannot idealize that which I cannot grasp with my mind, very limited mind, or understand. So I only want what I can conceive. These things are what motivate me and attract me. And it's a small world because beyond my grasp is so much, beyond my understanding is so much, but it's not in my universe of thought. So whatever I generate within myself as an overlay upon reality, that is what I pursue. And of course, all of these satisfactions are very temporary. He sometimes reached the dream he sought, or the one he sought, and found it to be naught. He grasped it in his arms and found it to be naught. And the person that he reached, he found to be another person like himself. So it's very egoistical in the lower sense of the word. It doesn't relate to the soul. It relates to the limiting ahamkara and to the sense of self-enhancement. That's what we seem to want here, to make me feel as if I am more than otherwise I feel, so that I can end the pain of my life as I grow larger and larger and apparently more and more invincible and powerful and more saved, as it were, more and more bound for paradise. I feel secure within me, secure within my environment. My truth is my security, and basically I am a sensitive type who is easily overwhelmed and easily suffering from the feeling of loss, of being lost. My tininess is revealed to me, and I want no longer to suffer from the feeling of being separated from God or excommunicated from God or lost or bewildered in all of the surroundings of life. So I take this very personally. This is my truth, my peace, my satisfied desire. It has nothing to do with what real truth is, what real peace in the larger sense is, what the satisfaction of the legitimate desires of humanity may be, yet alone the desires of the deity. My outpicturing of my desires, my dream, my limited vision of reality, the very limited satisfaction, you know, if I just had my house in the country and was surrounded by beautiful fields and trees, I would be forever happy. Well, no ideal achieved, no vision within the worlds of form will make me forever happy. This is what the six-ray type is looking for, the foreverness of happiness. So, and, you know, ultimately my finite thought of God, any thought of God is really a finite thought. Any thought is finite. And God is the infinite. So it's impossible to grasp, limit, and understand and limit God, the ultimate deity. But if we get a good Bible and a good scripture, and the words appeal to us, we hold on to that as if that is the reality, and as if through that we have found God. And for these, according to my tendency, which is very Martian here, I struggle against life and against others who believe differently than I do. I fight them to make sure that my ideal is the preeminent ideal, and I'm willing to sacrifice my life as well, usually because I believe in an afterlife, not always, but in which my dreams will be even more fulfilled and my sense of egoism will be enhanced. Well, you know, we all go through this at some time or another, I do believe. So then the wiser voice speaks and begins to correct and to teach this very personal state of mind that is in the throes of desire, in the throes of attempting to fulfill desire. Yes, you love the truth. It is always a motivating factor, and that's good. And there will always be desire and aspiration, and it will, in life, in the many different phases of life, reach out for different levels of life, material perhaps, material satisfactions, or the vision of reality. Notice that it says reaching out upward towards the vision of reality and not towards reality itself. So most of us are motivated by our own conception or vision of the ultimate satisfaction, and we begin to take the vision or the conception as the ultimate satisfaction. And this is a general philosophical statement from the soul, which has seen so much of human life, whereas the limited personality is always forgetting and not having a wide enough picture to see how it is that all men behave. So for these satisfactions, men always work, they expend their energy, they drive themselves forward out of the dissonance, out of the pain, escaping from that, and they drive others too, because it makes them feel as if they're in a community which shares their vision, so there's no doubt. It's the fight against doubt, because deep down there is a deep doubt in these six-ray types who are not yet home. And by interfering in the lives of others, imposing their own psychology and their own habits, they irk them, they irritate them, they disturb the process of others. And the truth that they love, well, it's how they interpret it. The vision and the dream, it's not a larger vision and dream of some greater intellect or of some divine being. No, it's how they envision and they dream. Again, the Ahamkara principle is so profoundly present. The sense of limited selfhood is determining so much of what these types are doing in the beginning phases. And they forget, if they ever knew, that the truth is limited by a mind which they do not critique. The mind is narrow, set, one-pointed, not inclusive, a limited instrument, but they don't critique it, so they think it's just as good as it can be. And also forgetting that their vaunted vision is touching The evidences of mystery, perhaps, but not the mystery or the reality itself. So how do you convince anybody that what they desperately want is only one step upon the way and is of little relative value compared to what they might otherwise achieve? They are so fixated on their particular need or want or desire that they overvalue it, they overemphasize it. Ray 6 is called the ray of undue emphasis. So really, chasing after lesser things, but not knowing that these things are lesser. This is what's going on here. Well, finally, the word goes forth from soul to form. Run not so straight. The first ray type goes straight to its goal with less emotion and more vision, I would say, more clarity of sight. Run not so straight because you're not going where you think you are going. You're rushing outward, and the kingdom of heaven is within your nature. The kingdom of God is an internal matter, and what you are seeking is what you already are. Really, the seeker and the sought are one, we are told in one of these short and important six-ray stanzas of achievement. So what you think is your path to satisfaction and to lasting happiness, permanent happiness, is really the outer circle of the life of God, the outer circle of reality. You're chasing after lesser things. You're going out instead of in, and it's in that you want to go. So, in fact, you're headed in the wrong direction. Stand at the center. Stand at your very own center. Find the center of your life. Find that cry within your heart. Find the heart of things within yourself. And then look everywhere, on every side, on all 360-degree points of the circle, and realize that it's all reality and it's all the life of God. And everything points to God. Everything. It's so hard, you know, to convince the six-ray type that everything is indicative. Everything is important. Everything is evidence of the deity and not just one particular thing. It's like spirituality and life for them is only one thing. And DK says this is a great triumph for the Black Lodge. The Black Lodge wants to induce limitation and narrowness and the rejection of the beauty of life. And it will motivate people in sort of a hyper-excited way to want only one thing and reject all other things, and therefore be willing to sacrifice all the good and beauty of life. Well, you know, what's the example? Let's blow up the world so long as we can get to heaven. See, this is the ultimate in rejectionism. Here's all the beauty of God's manifestation and all the presence of God, and we reject it. We don't want any part of it, and we're willing to sacrifice it and everybody else and the desires of everybody else so we can achieve our own desires and satisfactions. So don't die for the outer. Don't die for the superficial. If you have to die, let it be really for a principle. The glory of dying may be a little easier to accomplish than struggling through the pain of living with positive intent and with transformational results of that which you otherwise had rejected. So die not for the outer. Turn in. Turn. Find your own center. And forget not God, who is your real self, your real soul, who dwells behind your superficial vision. In other words, just as the fifth ray type has to look beyond the form, so the sixth ray type has to look beyond the vision and rush not to the outer periphery. I've used the word restraint. Restrain themselves at the center, restraint at the center, and not rushing enthusiastically towards that which is of lesser value than a divinity, or that which is truly, deeply desired by the man as a soul once he realizes himself as a soul. And basically look around and appreciate your fellow human beings, listen to them, take them in, see who they are in their own right, rather than who you want them to be so that they can fulfill your ideals and reduce your anxiety that there's more than one. You know, it's this premature search for oneness in the world of form that gets us into trouble. So love more your fellow men, and do not sacrifice them for your own limited ideals. Okay, and now, you know, without my commentary, let's just read it. Ray 6, I see a vision. It satisfies desire. It feeds and stimulates its growth. I lay my life upon the altar of desire, the seen, the sensed, that which appeals to me, the satisfaction of my need, a need for that which is material, for that which feeds emotion, that satisfies the mind, that answers my demand for truth, for service, and my vision of the goal. It is the vision that I see, the dream I dream, the truth I hold, the active form which meets my need, that which I grasp and understand. See how my excitement grows as I read this? My truth, my peace, my satisfied desire, my dream, my vision of reality, my limited ideal, my finite thought of God. For these I struggle, fight, and die. Of course, the higher perspective is always there, also there as well. The one who's searching for God does not think he has a finite thought. So a higher perspective is also talking, even in this first paragraph. Love of the truth must always be desire and aspiration, reaching out for that which is material or soaring upwards towards the vision of reality must ever find their satisfaction. For this men work, driving themselves and irking others. They love the truth as they interpret it. They love the vision and the dream, forgetting that the truth is limited by mind, narrow and set, one-pointed, not inclusive, forgetting that the vision touches but the outer fringe of mystery and veils and hides reality. The word goes forth from soul to form. Run not so straight. The path that you are on leads to the outer circle of the life of God. The line goes forward to the outer rim. Stand at the center. Look on every side. Die not for outer forms. Forget not God, who dwells behind the vision. Love more your fellow men. Okay, friends, so, and then what we'll do is we'll go on here and we'll look at the interpretation that DK offers here of the sixth ray formula process. Right. And I think, yes, I think that word dissociation is important credit to Zachary for extracting it from this. I think the word I propose, restraint, is also important. And once one dissociates, one can apply restraint. So then, this will be the end of Techniques of Integration webinar commentaries number 14, EP2, page what? Am I missing something? I'm sure I am. 372, page 372. And beginning of Techniques of Integration webinar commentaries number 15. EP2, page 372. And it's always interesting, you know, after interpreting the stanza for oneself, to see the larger point of view presented by the master and the things that he tends to emphasize, whereas we may have overlooked them. So we'll move on. This is a program of about an hour and 20 minutes, just like the other one was. Not a very easy unit of time to fit into presentational slots, but there it is, and we hope that you can get something out of it. We'll see you soon. Take care.